WOWDLP, Tacoma Park.
Today we have a very fabulous and also emotional show to bring you. We hope that you will look at our Artist Experience page on Facebook so that you can see the images that we'll be talking about. It's also a place where we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback, so please look at this page while you're listening. You can stream this program at tacomaradio.org. And we're also putting podcasts of this show on my website, SheilaBlake.com, and on ArtistExperience.com, so you can listen at any time. The podcasts are also can be found on iTunes.
Good morning, everyone. Exactly a month ago, we did a program titled The Four Freedoms, highlighting the works of the great artist and illustrator Norman Rockwell. Sheila and I wanted to return to the idea of freedom in our society and even the world. Our program today could not have been any timelier. We are going to highlight a small but extremely powerful exhibition in the West Wing at the National Gallery titled Daoud Bey, The Birmingham Project. This profound exhibit of four large scale inkjet photographic prints and videos serve as a tribute to the victims of the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama in 1963. This work was a tribute of the 50th anniversary of this horrific act of hatred in America. Six innocent young African-American boys and girls lost their lives that day. Four young girls died in the bombing that day, and two young boys in the aftermath of the tragedy. This exhibition intelligently creates a narrative by juxtaposing in photography the youth of the present day Birmingham, Alabama, and the adults on how those people would have looked should they have not been the victims of the act of hate and violence. These black and white inkjet prints, large-scale ones, are diptychs. There is a great strength in these portraits as art images, and they exude a great sensitivity, and they evoke a great power. This is a tremendous history that comes with these works. Sheila, tell us about that.
The 16th Street Baptist Church was organized as the first colored Baptist church of Birmingham, Alabama in 1873. Birmingham was an industrial city with steel mills and coal mines. Its population was an uneasy mix of working class whites and poor blacks who had come to the city from rural Alabama in search of opportunity. It was a city of tension and violence with an undertow of racial hatred, where dynamiting and bombing of black-owned homes and businesses were so common that the city was nicknamed Bombingham. During the civil rights movement of the 1960s, the 16th Street Baptist Church served as an organizational headquarters. It was a site of mass meetings and a rallying point for African Americans protesting widespread institutionalized racism in Birmingham, Alabama, and in the South. The Reverends Fred Shuttleworth, who was the chief local organizer, James Bevel, who was the leader of SLIC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and who initiated the Children's Crusade and taught the students nonviolence, and Martin Luther King Jr. They were all frequent speakers at the church, and they led the movement. On Sunday, September 15th, 1963, members of the Ku Klux Klan planted 19 sticks of dynamite outside the basement of the church. At 10:22 a.m., they exploded, killing four girls and injuring 22 others. They were preparing for the church's youth day and getting ready for their choir practice. A funeral for the victims was attended by more than 8,000 mourners, white and black, but no city officials attended. This was one of a string of more than 45 bombings within the decade. The neighborhood of Dynamite Hill was the most frequently targeted area during this time. The bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church increased federal involvement in Alabama. President Johnson paved the way for passage of the landmark 1964 Civil Rights Act, which outlawed discrimination on the basis of race, ethnicity, religion, or gender, and abolished the Jim Crow laws that had enforced segregation across much of the South. And in 1965, the Voting Rights Act, was passed, making literacy tests and poll taxes illegal. Following the bombing, more than $300,000 of unsolicited gifts were received by the church, and the repairs began immediately. The church reopened on June 7th, 1964, and there's a stained glass window that depicts a black Jesus designed by John Petz that was donated by citizens of Wales and installed in the front window. When the crime was committed, when four girls lay blasted to death in the shattered basement of the 16th Street Baptist Church, one of the killers, Bobby Frank Cherry, was young and strong and confident that his world, one of white robes and closed minds, would turn forever. In 2002, 40 years later, a Jefferson County jury of 9 whites and 3 blacks found Mr. Cherry, who was then a 71-year-old former Klansman, guilty of the murders of Addie Mae Collins, Denise McNair, Cynthia Wesley, and Carol Robertson. He had told his family and friends that he'd been proud of his part in the bombings, and he had lived as a free man for all these years, almost 40 years. Cherry was the last of the bombers to be convicted, and he died in prison when he was 74. It took a long time. It took 40 years for all four men to be convicted of murder in the most shameful act of the civil rights movement.
Yeah, we'll talk about justice. 40 years it took. It blows my mind. The videos, and especially the video of our artist Daoud Bey, are extremely insightful, important for you to understand the small exhibition that really is a huge project for our artist Daoud Bey. Both videos encapsulate well the history of this event and the concept of these works as a series in the Birmingham Project. This exhibition, again, of only 4 photographs, well, you know, you're going to get the message, and that's the power of the small exhibit. And it speaks about the tribute and the legacy and this incident in our history that has had generations of ramifications right up to this day, right here and right now.
In this show, there are two videos. The first video is an interview with Daoud Bey. It's a 10-minute documentary of Bey talking about his work. When Daoud Bey was 11, he saw pictures of the girls who were killed in the bombing and the picture of Sarah Collins, the sister of Addie Mae, lying in the hospital with gauze over his eyes after the bombing. He was so moved that he never forgot it. And if you look at this picture, you might not either. Sarah Collins did live but lost one eye. And then there are the news photos of the church, the girls, the young members of the Klan waving their flags. These pictures of the girls, some of the youngest victims of the civil rights movement, are memorialized along with two boys, Virgil Ware, who was 13, who was shot in the back while he was on his bike with his brother after finishing his paper route, and Johnny Robertson, 16, who was shot by the police as a result of the violence that followed the bombing. The pictures of the shooters, the members of the White Citizens Council, are full of rabid hate, waving Confederate flags at a pep rally. Imagine riding in a car with your white friends and taking out your pistol and shooting a kid on a bike for Sunday morning fun. It is really heartbreaking.
Yes, Sheila, heartbreaking, soul-wrenching, and downright mind-blowing that I learned this has happened through these powerful videos. It's so numbing and emotional. It's important that we introduce this wonderful artist and photographer, Daoud Bey. He's a tremendous talent, and he's been making photographs for over 40 years. He was born David Edward Smickley of Jamaica, Queens in 1953. In the early 70s, he's changed his name to Daoud Bey. A product of New York City schools, he went off to college and finally to Yale, where he received his MFA in photography. He has primarily focused on communities and youth, often marginalized. His brand of street photography documents a variety of people in their environments. His works about the youth of Harlem, class pictures, and imagined experience of the Underground Railroad evoke time and experience and place in very intelligent ways. His honors and accolades are huge, and with all kinds of important artists in residencies, grants, scholarships, and fellowships this artist has had throughout his career. He recently won the truly most prestigious MacArthur Fellowship Genius Grant Award in 2017. This artist's resume reads like a dream, and he's settled in Chicago now, and he teaches as a professor and a distinguished artist at Columbia College. Daoud Bey's work is smart, it's beautiful, and it's very timely and current. There's an introduction video, which is off the exhibition space, which has the artist talk about his influence and concepts for the project. He speaks personally, directly, and with great sensitivity. It was hard to get through that video as he explains how that one incident in his life altered his whole mindset about his life that occurred on September 15th, 1963. It was very emotional to hear an artist talk so wonderfully about such a horrible event.
A photograph is a moment in time. Daoud Bey wanted to achieve something that expanded time. He wanted to show the past and the present and perhaps the future. He wanted to show that what would have happened to these children if their lives had continued. He made these portraits of African-American adolescents who were the same age as the murdered children in 1963. They are rich in contrast and big, so you can look into their faces and see so much pride and pain and fear and determination. You can look as long as you like to see inside these people. Each portrait is paired with a man or woman of the age that they would have been now had they lived to be older African Americans who had lived their lives, the lives the kids never got to have. In each pair, you can see the young person growing into the older person. The young people are looking straight out beyond the camera, but the older people are looking straight out at the viewer. It's subtle, but the pride in having lived a satisfied life is what shows. Each picture is two things. It represents the child whose life was stopped, who didn't get to live his life, and the actual person looking at you at the present time. I feel, looking at these photographs, so privileged to be able to look into their faces. Great portrait photography is a mystery. Why one picture is so present, why it makes you feel so much, and another could leave you with very little. The black and white portrait of an African-American boy, Michael Anthony Allen, who appears to be about 16, on his way to being a man, and the depth of feeling and pride and confusion and resolve and fear. And there's some defiance, but determination too, all written on his face. He's thinking about the future. And at the same time, it's a black and white photo of a stranger, someone I'll never know. And the older man, George Washington, who he's paired with, is maybe 70, possibly a businessman. He's achieved a respectable place in his community. He has parts of all those feelings, but a certain pride, but no joy and also sadness. He's tired, but he's not worn out. The more you look, the more you can see the boy and the man.
Oh, thank you, Sheila, for that. That's absolutely correct. I mean, I think you're kind of getting into something we're going to talk about a little later, and that the study of the juxtaposition of these two, they kind of blend into a whole. They kind of morph into mm-hmm. this essence of young and old simultaneously. Well, our artist is certainly creating art of the past and present in a visual timeline that's right before your eyes, and they're visual portraits of the past in the sense, but they're also very contemporary. Our artist wants to think about how these young innocent boys and girls lost their lives, and you know, as they would be alive today. Well, there's multiple moments exist as these diptych photographs of the two portraits serve as double portraits of the same person, and here he's going to Birmingham, Alabama, to find these people as well. Their projections of fuller lives, as Sheila has said, and this I've never seen in a photographic exhibit, and that's the intelligence of this concept. I think that's where the artist shines. And there are only four exhibits, so you have this small, intimate space to see basically four times two is eight people to study. And so that's the really, really wonderful thing. And of course, there's a video we'll talk about later. But as I looked at these beautiful photographs, one such titled Mary Parker and Kayla Cowan, I thought of our history. These people come with a history, as all of us do. Their gazes are beautifully human, and whatever their history is, we have to embrace them. I believe these images reflect the physiognomy, the emotionality, and personality that yearns for dialogue with sensitivity, respect, and dignity. You wanted to kind of reach out and touch their hands, look them in the eye, and have a conversation. The intensity and the poise and the pose are as human can be. And here, reflecting on those children that never had the opportunity to have those conversations. And that's, emotionally powerful part of this exhibition. These two portraits conjure up a sense of enlightenment for me. And in those particular, in Mary Parker and Kayla Cowan, they seemed enlightened somehow. They had something extra. And with the older figure, I saw it as wisdom and ages and experience. And in the young one, I saw it as this enlightenment of defiant intensity and searching. And I think there's a beauty in that. We want our young people to be defiant, to find their road, and you know, to do it with intensity. And the search is about the growth. And I think they both sit in a church pew and they gaze out. And that, to me, that gets to me. That's a personal thing. They're reflecting on their intensity in a worship space. And that's a perfect place to do that. And I think that's one of the powers of these environments in the photographs.
That's the thing about the photographs. You can look as long as you like. Something you could never do with a real person, because there's no place to retreat to any sort of space, safe space of saying, I'm not implicated, or this doesn't affect me. as Bay had to confront the fact that they're just pictures, and that's where the artist begins, how to convey the experience he has with the limitations of the mechanics, the paper, the chemicals, the limits, the stillness, and then take you beyond them to the true experience. That's the genius. I hope I can convey to you some of how deeply this work reached me. They don't let us retreat in any way. And that, even though this is a long time ago, the original bombings, it brings you to the present. And it somehow, it's like we hear of, I remember hearing about those bombings because I was already a young adult at the time. And when I heard about them, it was a sad thing, but looking back and seeing the lives that were lost is really tragic.
Well, yeah, you know, this is the part of it that they confront you not in a disdainful way. These photographs to me confront me in actually a loving way, and it's, that's where the conversation begins in this exhibition. You know. That's youth. It's people my age, and you wanna, like I said in the beginning, you want to embrace them. And you know, another aspect of these works that kind of comes to mind is the delicacy of the textures as the photographer gives us. He has these facial features and the clothes that are worn and the settings that they're portraits and they're filled with wonderful texture, and texture is a great word. I mean, it's the surface quality of an object, the surface quality of a human skin, the surface quality of the hair, and it's so rich. And the resolution of these portraits is really amazing, and they're large scale. And you see how beautiful their faces are. I mean, you just could kind of, you go over the surface of their faces, and you say, "Wow, how wonderful!" Mm-hmm. And the clarity of the hair, and the styles, and the scarf, and the shirt, and the wood surface of the pew—that's something that's, again, it really hit me between the eyes. You know, you're in a worship space, and you're looking at that pew and the wood grain, and their hands are over that wood grain. It was very beautiful, and it brings you to a kind of a sense of calmness, like you're comfortable in these textures. They're very believably human, and the expression and the tilts of the head, this is very important in these photos, the tilts of the head and the expressiveness of the hands. This is something that the human condition is so geared into, you know, the head and the hands, and then there's the jewelry, the glasses of the on the head. Some of them are wearing glasses, and the sharpness of the nails. These are all very part of the figures that are very powerful. And again, there's the great spirit and soulfulness of these expressive bodies.
I'm going to talk about one of the pairs of photographs. It juxtaposes Don Sledge and Moses Austin. The younger man, the older man in this photograph is Don Sledge, and the younger boy is Moses Austin. Mr. Sledge is in a dark suit with a perfect handkerchief folded in four points in his breast pocket and a starched white shirt. He looks at you as if he has many things to teach, but you'd better approach with respect. He is impeccable, probably an important member of the church. He carries the weight of his race on his shoulders. He looks like he has never slipped up in his life. Moses, the boy beside him, is about 12. In both these portraits, the hands are folded, which looks completely natural to Mr. Sledge, but unnatural and protective and obedient in Moses' pose. He looks as if he's suspicious of what anyone could want of him, while Don Sledge is sitting upright, but his back comfortably in his chair. Moses is leaning forward as if he doesn't know what will be asked of him, and he's ready to leap out of his chair. He's a handsome kid. And in each of these pictures, the skin is so perfectly beautiful. His is so smooth. He has a nice plaid shirt on, but his eyes are darting over to the left. I wonder how Daoud Bey posed his sitters. What did he tell them? They seem straightforward, not at all manipulated, but the camera records a blink of a second And the artist selects the photo, probably from one of many. So he's looking for something. And what he's looking for is, in these faces, really a dialogue between the sitter and the artist.
Yeah, very nice. The Moses Austin, the young boy sitting in the chair, he had that kind of adolescent energy that he could burst out of the chair, or, you know, what do you want from me? And yet there was this coyness, like he was okay with the experience, but he had that, you know, that adolescent energy. My favorite photograph from the exhibition is the one of Betty Salvage and Faith Spiked, I hope I pronounced that right, from 2014. This work is about poise. The older woman is poised and comfortable in that. The younger sitter in Faith is less so, and her glasses are like slightly broken. They don't fit comfortably on her face. I could totally relate to that as a young person wearing glasses. You know, they're a little uncomfortable on her face, and it shows her vulnerability. And that doesn't exist at all in the older sitter. Her hands are poised beautifully, and it's a magnificent photograph. And there's a sense of presence, and I think that's what this photograph shows, a great sense of wise presence. And again, that humanity is coming through. The nails, juxtaposing the nails of them with the older sitter, Betty Salvage, being such beautifully elegant, perfect nails. And the young adolescent nails are somewhat not imperfect, you know, and that we would have in a younger child. That photograph, I mean, I could have stared at it for hours.
Yeah, I love these pictures too. Betty Selvidge is self-assured. She's an attractive woman. She has a beautiful suit and nice hair, and then those nail extensions. She's a no-nonsense woman. She seems as though she's through real education, she has risen to the place she wants to be. And she probably has some fun too, just not now. And Faith Spite is at the most awkward age. She's wearing a fancy satin shiny dress and is counting on herself to be completely in compliance with everything. Everything she'll achieve will be through education. Right now, at this age, 12, she's not even aware of what she looks like. But when she grows up a little and gets her hair grown out, she'll be just fine.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Thank you for that. Well, we're going to take a break now, and we're going to come back and talk also about these great videos that were about. We're going to listen to a very controversial song, a song by a great artist in Nina Simone.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn. And I mean every word of it. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn. Can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows about show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet. Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path, I think every day's gonna be my last. Mercy on this land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I've even stopped believing in prayer.
Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. Keep on saying, go slow. Well, that's just the trouble. Washing the windows, picking the cotton, you're just plain rotten, you're too damn lazy, you're thinking it's crazy. Where am I going? What am I doing? I don't know, I don't know. Just try to do your very best, stand up, be counted with all the rest, cause everybody knows about you thought I was kidding, didn't you? Picket lines, school boycotts, they try to say it's a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. Yes, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady. And you'd stop calling me Sister Sadie. Oh, but this whole country is full of lies. You all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust you anymore. You keep on saying, go slow. Go slow. Well, that's just the trouble. Desegregation, mass participation, unification. Do things gradually, but bring more tragedy. Why don't you see it? Why don't you feel it? I don't know, I don't know. You don't have to live next to me. Just give me my equality. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Everybody knows about Alabama. Everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. That's it.
Welcome back. You're listening to WOWD-LP Tacoma Park. I want to talk about the video. This second video is really a work of art, which I have to say, when I go into a museum and I see a video, I usually don't pay attention unless there are those huge, fabulous projections. But just looking at a TV screen is not where I want to be. But in this case, this is really an elevated way of using video. The beginning of the video is calming music, and there's a split screen. The music was composed by Daoud Bey's son. The film is taken from a vantage point of a young child in the back seat of a car. On the right is a very slow-moving trip through the clear autumn sky. The leaves are starting to turn. You travel along the tops of the houses and the telephone wires and trees and more sky, and the whole thing's a sense of a day in which nothing much will happen. It took me back to the morning of September 11th, and when I had been walking and I came back into my neighborhood, and there were people in the street shouting about the Twin Towers. And it had been this perfectly clear day. So on the left side of the screen is a slow-moving visual journey of ordinary places. There's a barber shop with the carefully arranged tools, a shaving brush, scissors, towels, a covered jar with barber tools in blue liquid. The light is coming through. Some more bottles, astringent, a jar of talc, a sense of timeless waiting. And on the right side, the sky is bright blue, moving through the trees. On the left, on the counter, are some child's paintings. The paintings say, "Winners never quit." And there are three kids with a soccer ball. But wait, the kids are white or pink with blonde hair. Are winners always white? On the right, we've traveled to the 16th Street Baptist Church, an old, large, dark brick building. And on the left, a row of hair dryers in the barber shop. Now we're at a lunch counter, the line of worn green stools. And on the counter, a napkin holder, a sugar dispenser, salt and pepper, Spare and Gentle, moving along, scanning the counter. There's a jar of straws. The light on the sky on the right is bright. These are African-American businesses, probably not much different from what they were in 1963. They're waiting to serve their customers. And behind this absolute calm, the fact of the bombing, the utter violence, is shattering our tranquility as we look at this.
Yeah, this is an intense video, and the artist is looking at these segregated spaces like the beauty parlor, the classroom, the barbershop, and the luncheonette counter. It looks like a space, you know, like in 1963 in the segregated South, but the split screen creates this kind of juxtaposition here. You're looking at the tops of the houses, the trees, the telephone wires, and you know, of any city, suburban landscape. I mean, you can't necessarily say it's, you know, Birmingham, Alabama. And this the slow pan makes you think about this. Well, what is this all about? Well, it's about the things that we see every day, a blue sky, trees, houses. These are constantly in our lives. And everyone has the ability to experience a tree, a house, and a blue sky. That's the way I interpret it. It's not just one race of people. I mean, this is about our shared humanity. And, you know, the sky is beautifully blue, the trees are beautifully green, and some of them are changing, and the bark of the tree is brown. It's all nature, and this is nature for all of us. And they're the top of the houses and the telephone wires and the power lines. These are not snippets of black people's houses or white people's houses. They're simply the tops of houses. And then they're the telephone wires that connect them. Well, maybe this is about the need of communication and dialogue and power, as in electricity, which is a metaphor for power and control. The four segregated spaces do not tell me if they're definitely, I can't for sure say if they're definitely black or white. The luncheonette counter is clean, orderly, and anyone can eat at it just like any food could be served there. And so the bubblegum machine, which any child could experience, the sugar container, the napkins that any child could grab, and the cleanliness and the shininess and stainless steel countertops is something that we all want. This is all very familiar to us. We all know these things, and it's for all of us to know. So the same is for the barbershop. How am I supposed to know if that barbershop is specifically for a black man's head or my own head? In fact, and this is what really got to me with this video, the aftershave that I used this morning, and I'm telling you, everyone, this morning, the same aftershave that I used was the same aftershave that the video showed on that countertop. On the countertop of the barbershop. I mean, so there's nothing in that photograph for me that specifically says race, ethnicity, or possibly even gender. And I think that's part of the whole thing. We know that this is from Birmingham, Alabama in 1963, but the humanity of it is for all of us. And I think the color of your skin should not be a part of this. And I think that's what the artist is trying to say. You know, there's nothing that could, nothing in any of those photographs that could distinguish one from the other.
Yeah. But these places are clean, but they're not new. Everything has been there for a long time. There really is a difference. Nothing glitzy or advertised. Like the kids who were alive in 1963 would still be getting their hair cut there and their kids and grandkids at that same barbershop. The music was simple and beautiful, and it removes tension from the visual.
Oh, absolutely. That music is, you slide into the video with this lovely music. And to me, the most touching of the segregated spaces, which was the children's color renditions with little artwork of The Winners Never Quit. This is really emotional for me, for the six victims, as children never had the opportunity to be in the game of life and live out any dream that a child would love. And Winners Never Quit. It's for all our children to believe in, to give them that right to never quit and just keep on going through life with the ups and downs and the support systems that they might have, the society and where they live. And I think this segment of the video, of course, touches on knowledge and education and possibly resilience. And young people have resilience. Children are malleable. They could be molded for good and for bad. And sadly today, not every child has that chance for opportunity and education. And this harkens on another current-day tragedy that's unfolding in the media as we speak. The cheating and bribes and payoffs of rich, advantaged white people to pay and cheat to get their children into elite schools, while other equally as smart if not smarter, disadvantaged students are not being able to get to advance their academic opportunities because the system is rigged against them. Now, as a university professor and at a university that's been named in the scandal, it blows my mind. My brain hurts thinking about how disingenuous this is for our society to play this out in this day and age. It is nothing short of a disgrace, and I'm being kind by just saying that. I could rant for hours on this, but this is a disgusting act of betrayal on a large portion of our young people's population, which is a lot of minority students. So everyone deserves the same chance, and Daoud Bey really knocked me out with that segment in the video because it's very current. I mean, he did it 5 years ago, whatever, but it's still very current. And the good news is that as my blood pressure was rising, thinking about this during the video, the music brought it down, and I really was very grateful for that lovely score in the videos.
Well, Tom, you and I went to see this exhibit on a morning when the museum was very quiet. It was early. The exhibit is on the ground floor, and you have to look for it. So there weren't many people there. They seemed to come and peek around and leave. I mean, nobody stayed very long except us. In the video, someone might come and sit for a couple of minutes and leave. Like, oh, this is too slow, or nothing's happening here. And I wanted to ask these people, what's the rush? What are you here for? Why did you come to this museum? The whole way it's assembled, the small theater, the music, it's an invitation to slow down. There's no other way to get anything from this. And there's so much to experience. Telling you, our audience, about this is important to me because it has stayed with me as an emotional experience that I want to keep. I want everyone to think about this. A museum is like a church. It's a time for contemplation. You can't do this if you're worrying about your parking meter running out or taking calls on your phone. It's like the yoga teachers say, to welcome yourself to your practice. Use the time you're entering the museum to slow down. Get yourself a snack and use that time to begin to experience being there. Everything about this exhibit is set up for you to have that experience. And unless you take the time, you'll get nothing.
Well, Sheila and I have talked about this need to take your time in looking at art many times in our 67 programs here at WOWD. To appreciate, understand, and digest art takes time. This cultural tragedy that has been unfolding for years now, as we rush through museums like we're going down the shopping list and grabbing items to put in our carts at the grocery store so we can get the hell out of there, that's kind of how I see a lot of people going through these museums. Mm-hmm. And you cannot do this with Dawood's Bay Birmingham Project. You have to sit through it. As emotional as it is, and it's very emotional, I really believe it's almost an imperative to sit through something like that, because that's what art does. It's a rich exchange. It's a dialogue between the artist and the viewer. In this particular exhibition especially, to rush through it denies not only the artist, but the history that is evolving in this country. Artists like ourselves live in a history, and all humans live in a history. And the gift to respond to this in the creative ways that Dawood Bay does is a kind of it's an entree to the sensitivity of the human condition, and it's all existing in this powerful exhibition. Upon reflecting on the video, I thought about my upbringing and the environments of growing up in the city, and that's New York City, like Dawood Bay and also like my co-host Sheila Blake. And my observations go way back, at which there was no utopian sense of living in New York City, Sheila. I think mm-hmm. you can agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw many things about prejudice firsthand when I was growing up in New York City. But what I can say is that being witness to the humanity and lack of humanity allowed me to reflect on the space and the place that I inhabited. In other words, I was always thinking about this situation of the human condition growing up in New York City. And in many ways, we are products of our environment. And I have to say at the end of the show that I cannot imagine growing up in segregated Alabama in 1963. I just can't imagine it. I shiver at that fact.
Well, I moved to North Carolina in 1963, and it was that same year. And I knew nothing about the South. We moved to a cabin on a tenant farm with a large tobacco allotment. It was the largest tobacco allotment in Durham County. And the tenant farmers lived in shacks on that farm with no running water and got their groceries in the store that was owned by the landowners. And these landowners weren't wealthy people. They just had the white privilege to live there and have these people. And so they all owed their grocery money to the landowners. What a racket. A friend gave me a book by the writer James Agee, Let Us Now Praise Famous Men. It's a classic. It's in the summer of 1936, during the Great Depression, James Agee spent 8 weeks on assignment for Fortune magazine with the photographer Walker Evans, living among sharecroppers in Alabama. While Fortune did not publish this article, Agee turned the material into a book titled Let Us Now Praise Famous Men. This writing and the photographs had a profound impact on me. The amount of love and respect A.G. and Evans had for these people. The tenant farmers were white. They had nothing except probably too many kids. And the only thing they felt better than were the Negroes downstream. So when they washed their clothes, the dirty water from their laundry ran past the shacks. It's a question about human nature. Is it just in us to have to feel better than someone else? I mean, these people had nothing. If you're not familiar with the Walker Evans pictures, look at them closely, as Walker Evans is one of Dawood Bay's touchstones. But the young murderers in Birmingham weren't poor. They were the next generation up. So they had a chance, their families had a chance to recover from the Great Depression and have these children who are living in, you know, not poverty at all. And because of the New Deal, they had regular working class lives. They had cars, they had access, and they had guns. So where does this hatred come from?
Yeah, that's the big question. Well, on March 15th, the world witnessed another horrific event involving people being slaughtered in their house of prayer, just like in Birmingham, Alabama. But this time, excuse me, it was in two mosques in New Zealand. Again and again, these tragedies continue to unravel the basic freedoms we talked about for two shows now, and especially in our Four Freedom show by Norman Rockwell, one of which was the freedom to worship. 56 years have passed since the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama, and it seems things have not changed all that much, or maybe they've even gotten worse with the advent of social media spreading this kind of hate. Or maybe we've become numb to these acts of destroying the fabric of our humanity and our divinity. Whatever your spiritual path is, or whatever you choose to worship, meditate, or contemplate, or wherever, this is an essential freedom that's still being threatened. As a man of faith, these events of today aches my very being, and this poignant exhibition by Daoud Bey, the Birmingham Project, reminds us of our history and its nemesis of hate, marginalization, and divisiveness. The exhibition is a great space to contemplate your contemporary issues with great photographs, and they're a tribute to the victims of the senseless violence and bigotry. The exhibition is at the National Gallery in the West Wing, and it's important and timely, and it goes till April 21st. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Sheila, what about our next show?
Well, there will be a blockbuster show on Jacopo Tintoretto at the National Gallery. This has been postponed because of the government shutdown. It was supposed to be here the first of the year, but it's there now. And this great painter from Venice provides us with an interesting look at Italian painting, because the paintings are weird. And the drawing, it's from Northern Italy. He was a powerhouse artist in painting and drawing. Our show will concentrate on how good drawing always makes for good painting.
Okay, thank you, Sheila. Experience art and the visual in everything you do. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
And you're tuned to WOWDLP. We just ended the very fine program by Tom and Sheila. they called the program Art as Experienced, and today they were dealing with a very touching and important subject. We ended with music in that same tone, John Coltrane's Alabama, his dedication and tribute to the bombing of the youth in 1963. Alabama, John Coltrane. You're tuned to WOWD Radio at 94.3 FM and TacomaRadio.org.